Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour is narrated by George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the secret societies when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think is wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools or banned from our public institutions and our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple time-tested laws, we see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place, and they're teaching these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, our public institutions. We've made them a part of our national psyche. Now, you know, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years. Are you aware, for instance, that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your local public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent? That's why I contend that the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there's at least one school left in America that's still teaching this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits that we receive for their observance. Now, you know, every law has a penalty, and you don't have to know what that penalty is to suffer from its effects. So whether we call this the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, the Common Law, or Natural Law, it's automatic. And it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happened to be the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package. Remember, it's free of charge. It's a place to start. It doesn't cost anything. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. So you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. Click on the archives page, and you can download that free General Law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org. Go to our archives page. All right, we're reviewing a book. It's called Healing Codes for the Biological Apocalypse. It was written by Len Horowitz, and he has a chapter in here which deals with the King James, the Bible, and the secret societies. So before we get into next week's review of the New Age Bible versions, I wanted to cover the secret societies first so that we could find out who in the world has the power and the money to rewrite the Bible. That's a big undertaking. I think that Bill Gates could take over the Encyclopedia Britannica or buy out Reader's Digest and put in his own editorial opinion. But to take over the Bible, written by the finger of God himself, and rewrite it, take somebody a little bigger than Bill Gates, in my view. So in looking at the secret societies, we've covered a bunch of them. You know, we talked about the CFR and the Bilderbergers and the Knights of Malta, and there's probably 50 of these big, well-known organizations. Skull and Bones, for instance. You know, I listed a handful of them here: the Committee of 300, Trilateral Commission, Knights of Malta, Council on Foreign Relations, and so on. Now, last time we touched another secret society here, which is called the Pierre. I guess that's the way to pronounce it here. It's spelled P-R-I-E-U-R-E D Sion, S-I-O-N, Priuri D Sion. Well, over here we call these the Zion, Z-I-O-N instead of S-I-O-N. And it's called the Learned Elders of Zion, or Zionists. And Len Horowitz mentioned that toward the end of his chapter, chapter 3, dealing with the protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. And from his point of view, he said that he thought that that was probably fictitious, that the protocols of the Learned Elders were written by the Masonic Order. Well, I don't know who wrote them. I wasn't there. But I'm going to apply the Kwok Ting test, and let's take a look at these protocols. There are 16 of them here, 16 protocols of the Learned Elders that Henry Ford said in his book, The International Jew, were written by the Learned Elders of Zion in 1884 in Zurich, Switzerland, and that a copy of them, or that the substance of them, had been smuggled out of Russia in 1909 to Paris, where they were published, and Henry Ford published them in 1922, I believe it was, in the Dearborn Gazette in Dearborn, Michigan. It was Henry Ford's newspaper. So listen to this. Here are the exact words of the protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. It says here, the seventh protocol calls for, to each act of opposition, we must be in a position to respond by bringing on war through the neighbors of any country that dares to oppose us. And if these neighbors should plan to stand collectively against us, we must let loose a world war. Now that requires somebody with some power, doesn't it? The tenth protocol, people of all opinions and all doctrines are at our service, restorers of monarchy, demagogues, socialists, communists, and other utopians. We have put them all to work. Every one of them, from his point of view, is undermining the last remnant of authority, is trying to overthrow all existing order, and all the governments have been tormented by these actions. But we will not give them peace until they recognize our super government. Now, obviously, whoever's writing this, whatever group or organization, has some pretty big things on the agenda, don't they? Letting loose world war. We have tormented all of the governments. You know, there's 209 countries in the world. That's 209 governments. When we introduced the poison of liberalism into the government organism, its entire political complexion changed. The ninth protocol says, in order not to destroy permanently the Gentile institutions, we have laid our efficient hands upon them and rasped the springs of their mechanism. They were formerly in strict and just order, but we have replaced them with a liberal, disorganized, and arbitrary administration. And we have tampered with jurisprudence, the franchise, the press, freedom of the person, and most important of all, education and culture, the cornerstone of free existence. We have misled, stupefied, and demoralized the youth of the Gentiles by means of education in principles and theories patently false to us, but which we have inspired. Above existing laws, without actual change, but by distorting them through contradictory interpretations, we have created something stupendous in the way of results. The sixth protocol calls for, we shall soon begin to establish huge monopolies, colossal reservoirs of wealth, upon which even the big Gentile properties will be dependent to such an extent that they will all fall together with the government credit on the day following the political catastrophe. The economists here present must carefully weigh the significance of this combination. Then we must develop by every means the importance of our supergovernment, representing it as the protector and benefactor of all who voluntarily submit to us. The aristocracy of the Gentiles as a political force has passed away, and we need not take them into consideration. But as owners of the land, they are harmful to us in that they are independent in their sources of livelihood. Therefore, at all costs, we must deprive them of their land. The best means to attain this is to increase the taxes and mortgage indebtedness. These measures will keep land ownership in a state of unconditional subordination. Unable to satisfy their needs by small inheritances, the aristocrats among the Gentiles will burn themselves out rapidly. At the same time, it is necessary to encourage trade and industry vigorously, and especially speculation, the function of which is to act as a counterpoise to industry. Without speculation, industry will cause private capital to increase and tend to improve the condition of agriculture by freeing the land from indebtedness for loans by the land banks. It is necessary for industry to deplete the land both of laborers and capital, and through speculation transfer all of the money of the world into our hands, thereby throwing the Gentiles into the ranks of the proletariat. The Gentiles will then bow before us to obtain the right to existence. Looking at wages, the sixth protocol calls for, we will force up wages, which, however, will be of no benefit to workers, for at the same time we will cause a rise in the price of prime necessities, pretending that this is due to decline of agriculture and of cattle raising. We will also artfully and deeply undermine the sources of production by instilling in the workmen ideas of anarchy and encourage them in the use of alcohol, at the same time taking measures to drive all of the intellectual forces of the Gentiles from the land. The tenth protocol, to wear everyone out by dissension, animosities, feuds, famine, inoculation of diseases, and want, until the Gentiles see no other way of escape except an appeal to our money and our power. The fourth protocol. It is for this reason that we must undermine faith, eradicate from the minds of the Gentiles the very principles of God and soul, and replace these conceptions by mathematical calculations and material desires. The fifth protocol calls for, we will so wear out and exhaust the Gentiles by all of this that they will be compelled to offer us an international authority, which by its position will enable us to absorb without disturbance all of the governmental forces of the world and thus form a super government. Do we call that the United Nations? We must so direct the education of Gentile society that its hands will drop in the weakness of discouragement in the face of any undertaking where initiative is needed. The 14th Protocol calls for, when we become rulers, we shall regard as undesirable the existence of any religion except our own, proclaiming one God with whom our fate is tied as the chosen people, and by whom our fate has been made one with the fate of the world. For this reason we must destroy all other religions. If therefore should emerge contemporary atheists, then as a transition step this will not interfere with our aims. The 5th Protocol. A world coalition of Gentiles could cope with us temporarily, but we are assured against this by roots of dissension, among them so deep that they cannot be torn out. We have created antagonism between the personal and national interests of the Gentiles by arousing religious and race hatreds, which we have nourished in their hearts for 20 centuries. 20 centuries. That's a long time. The administrators chosen by us in the 2nd Protocol from the masses for their servility will not be persons trained for government, and consequently they will easily become pawns in our game, played by our learned and talented counselors, specialists, educated from early childhood to administer world affairs. As we know, our specialists have been acquiring the necessary knowledge for governing. The 13th Protocol. To prevent them from really thinking about anything themselves, we shall deflect their attention to amusements, games, pastimes, excitements, and people's palaces. Such interests will distract their minds completely from questions on which we might be obliged to struggle with them. Becoming less and less accustomed to independent thinking, people will express themselves in unison with us because we alone offer new lines of thought. Of course, through persons whom they do not consider as in any way connected with us. The 14th Protocol. In this divergence between the Gentiles and ourselves, inability to think and reason, is to be seen clearly the seal of our election as the chosen people, as higher human beings, in contrast with the Gentiles who have merely instinctive and animal minds. They observe, but they do not foresee, and they invent nothing except perhaps material things. It is clear from this that nature herself predestined us to rule and guide the world. Sounds like a world plan to me. The 12th Protocol. Dealing with the press, they say, we shall saddle it and keep tight rein upon it. We shall do the same also with other printed matter. For of what use is it to rid ourselves of attacks in the press if we remain exposed to criticism through pamphlets and books? Not one announcement will reach the people save under our supervision. We have attained this at the present time to the extent that all news is received through several agencies in which it is centralized from all parts of the world. Literature and journalism are two most important educational forces, and consequently, our government will be and become the owner of most of the journals, and if we permit 10 private journals, we shall organize 30 of our own, and so on. We must not be suspected by the public, for which reason all of the journals published by us will be externally of the most contrary opinions and tendencies, thus evoking confidence in them and attracting our unsuspecting opponents, who thus will be caught in our trap and rendered harmless. The 1st Protocol. Our triumph has been rendered easier by the fact that in our relations with the men whom we have wanted, we have always worked upon the most sensitive chords of the human mind, upon the cash account, upon the cupidity, upon the insatiability for material needs of man. And each one of these human weaknesses taken alone is sufficient to paralyze initiative, because it hands over the will of men to the disposition of him who has bought their activities. And Louis D. Brandeis, who was a justice of the United States Supreme Court, sums it up this way. He said, let us all recognize that we Jews are a distinct nationality, of which every Jew, whatever his country, whatever his station, or whatever his shade of belief, is necessarily a member. Now remember I said we'd use the Kwok Ting test on these protocols to see whether or not there's any evidence contained herein as to whether these protocols were written by the Learned Elders of Zion, a Jewish organization, or they were written by the Freemasons or the Republicans, the Democrats, the Communists, or somebody else. Now, based upon the internal evidence of the protocols themselves, and if you'd like to get a copy of the entire treatise on the protocols, you can get a copy called a book called The International Jew, The World's Foremost Problem by Henry Ford Sr. And you can get a copy, I'm sure, from bravenewbookstore.com. bravenewbookstore.com. Now, today, if anyone mentions the word Jew, and if it isn't in the context of the Holocaust or something that's beneficial or complimentary, he is immediately branded as anti-Semitic. Anti-Semitic. I'm not quite sure if I want to take the chance of being branded anti-Semitic, but I guess I'll have to as just a as an occupational hazard in reporting facts. Remember, in the case of the book here, Healing Codes for the Biological Apocalypse, the subject of the protocols was broached by Len Horowitz, who is a Jew. His take on it is that these protocols were written by the Masons. But as we read through the protocols, we see the word Gentile used quite often. A reference to world control is used quite often. There are other internal words and phrases that are used in the protocols themselves that would indicate that these are written by people who are Jews or of Jewish descent. So I think that the internal evidence of the protocols themselves point to, you know, words like Gentiles are not normally used by people who are Freemasons or Republicans or Democrats. Here's another factoid. It really doesn't make any difference to you and me whether this was put out by the Republican Central Committee or the Communist Central Committee or by the World Council of Churches or whoever might have done it. Every one of these protocols has already been effected, past tense. There isn't anything in here that we need to be concerned about preventing. Everything in here has already been accomplished. And whoever did this did it to us, the white Anglo-Saxons, the Christians, the Western world, and it's already an accomplished fact. So whether it's the Republicans or Democrats or Communists or the Jesuits or Catholics or whoever did it to us, it's already been done. But for the sake of our discussion here, would we like to know who in all probability did it to us? All right. So with that in mind, the Kwok Ting test requires three elements here. It requires the testimony to be complete. It requires the testimony. It has to have extemporaneous detail. And the testimony must be supported by witnesses and evidence. So let me give you complete testimony, extemporaneous detail, and supported by witnesses and evidence. Let me begin with a fellow by the name of Jack Moore. Jack Moore. He's a guy who wrote a piece. Let's see if I can get the name here. Christian Patriots Defense League, Citizens Emergency Defense System. We hear so much these days about Jewish persecution of Jews in the Soviet Union and how the Israelis are our anti-communist allies in the Near East. So I thought you might like to know these facts concerning the USSR. The actual governing body is called the Politburo of the Communist Party. And so he goes through the Russian names. I'll give you a couple of them here. Juref, Vladimir Ilyich Andropov. His real name is Lieberman. He's a Jew. He's the president. Dmitry, and he's got some more name here. His real name is Oldbrick. He's a Jew. He's a minister. And then here's another by the name of Andrei Gromyko. He's a Jew, minister of foreign affairs. And then there's a Viktor Grishin. His real name is Graysall. He's a Jew. Now, there's 23 members of this Politburo as of December 20th, 1983, which is the list that I have. Every one of the 23 members of the Soviet government's Politburo in 1983 were Jews. No exceptions. And again, this is put out here, an inspection of the Soviet diplomatic corps reveals that 90% of the Soviet ambassadors are Jews. And here are some key posts held by Jews. Dobrynin, real name is Gutman, ambassador to the USA. Dobrynin, real name is Sonenchin, former ambassador to Czechoslovakia, and so on. So I just thought I would put out some information on that score. Okay, now there's one there. Let me see what else I've got here. Let me put this over here on this pile, and then let me go to an interview by Harold Wallace Rosenthal. Rosenthal was the administrative assistant to Senator Jacob Javits of New York back in the 1970s. Jacob Javits was a Jew. Harold Rosenthal was a Jew. Harold Rosenthal was interviewed by Walter White of Western Front publication put out back in the 70s. And in the interview, and I've covered this before here on the air, is a, let's see what we got here, 13-page interview by Harold Rosenthal. Rosenthal, who was the administrative assistant to Jacob Javits, spilled his guts, and he said some things that he probably ought not to have said, being a member of a secret society. If you're a member, for instance, of the Masonic Order, and you blab your mouth and you tell too much, every Mason takes an oath that he agrees that his fellow Masons can slit his throat from ear to ear and then tie him out to be eaten by the birds and the crabs at the high tide mark of the ocean. You know, these secret societies have oaths that they take. The Jesuits do that, for instance. And as a result of that, that keeps their members in order, and it keeps them from blabbing and telling those of us that are outside of these secret societies what it is that you and I aren't supposed to know. But, you know, human nature being what it is, you know, people like to talk, and so this guy Rosenthal did. And here's what he told Walter White. In a highly confidential interview with a Jewish administrative assistant to one of this nation's ranking senators, he said, quote, "It is a marvel that the American people do not rise up and drive every Jew out of this country," unquote. The Jew, Mr. Harold Wallace Rosenthal, made this statement after admitting Jewish dominance in all significant national programs. He said, quote, "We Jews continue to be amazed with the ease by which Christian Americans have fallen into our hands. While the naive Americans wait for Khrushchev to bury them, we have taught them to submit to our every demand," unquote. When asked how a nation could be captured without their knowing it, Mr. Rosenthal attributed this victory to absolute control of the media. He boasted of Jewish control of all news. Any newspaper which refused to acquiesce to controlled news was brought to its knees by withdrawing advertising. Failing in this, the Jews stopped the supply of newsprint and ink. It's a very simple matter, he stated. When asked about men in high political office, Mr. Rosenthal said that no one in the last three decades has achieved any political power without Jewish approval. Quote, "Americans have not had a presidential choice since 1932. Roosevelt was our man, and every president since has been our man," unquote. When the U.S. foreign policy was mentioned, the bedroom confidence of the interview was all but set aside, and with disdain and mockery, he sneered at the American stupidity by saying, quote, "It is Zionist, communist policy from beginning to end, and yet the citizens think this Jewish policy will benefit America." He cited détente and Angola as examples of Jewish diplomacy. The credulous nature of Americans only drew contempt from him. The interview continued on an almost omniscient plane. He said, "We Jews have put issue upon issue to the American people. Then we promote both sides of the issue as confusion reigns. With their eyes fixed on the issues, they fail to see who is behind every scene. We Jews toy with the American public as a cat toys with a mouse, and the blood of the masses will flow as we wait for our day of world victory," Mr. Rosenthal added coldly. So let's think about that. Notice that term, world victory. I'm going to write that down. This indicates that this is a worldwide endeavor. Notice in the protocols the word Gentile. That's a buzzword among Jews which identifies those of us that are non-Jews. All right. So let's just write down some of these little buzzwords as we progress along here. Now, in another book here called the Who is Esau Edom? I got a little story here to tell you. It's written by a fellow named Charles A. Wiseman. Sounds like he's a Jew to me, Wiseman. Anyway, he identifies much of what goes on in the Jewish community. And from the perspective of the Bible, he pointed out on page 64 that Jesus had a run-in with the Jews, and that his constant problem was with the Zionists, the Pharisees, the scribes, the Jewish establishment of his day, in which Jesus pointed out the characteristics of these people when he said that they were hypocrites, a generation of vipers, that they were full of dead men's bones, that they were full of all uncleanness, that they were blind guides of the blind, that they were a wicked and adulterous generation, that they were full of iniquity, that they were serpents, they were murderers, and that they were of their father the devil. Now that's 10 attributes that Jesus ascribed to the Pharisees and the scribes that today we would call the learned elders of Zion. If Jesus was alive today, he would be branded as being anti-Semitic, a Jew hater. And I want to point out to you that Jesus was descended from Judah. Jesus was a Jew. Isn't that just real special? Now, in the Bible, there's another source of information here that talks about these people that we call the learned elders of Zion. It's in Revelation 2, verse 9, and Revelation 3, verse 9. Listen to this. Here's God who tells us, "I know your works in tribulation and poverty, but you are rich, and I know the blasphemy of them which say that they are Jews and are not, but are of the synagogue of Satan." There's a religious institution or organization out here which is called the Synagogue of Satan. And it's also recorded over here in 3 verse 9, he says, "Behold, I will make them of the synagogue of Satan, which say they are Jews and are not, but do lie. Behold, I will make them to come and worship before you, before your feet, and know that I have loved you." Now, there's another little buzzword that is used here in the protocols called the chosen people. You know, it isn't the Masons or the Communists or Republicans that call themselves the chosen people. It is the Jews who call themselves the chosen people. And twice here in Scripture, And in Revelation 3, verse 9, those that say they are Jews and are not, but do lie. Well, who are these people that claim to be Jews and are not Jews? We'll take that up when we come back. Let me give you a mid-course reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there, georgegordon.org. Go to the archives page. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call our law school at 417-273-4967. All right, we are talking about a book that we're reviewing here called Healing Codes for the Biological Apocalypse, written by Lynn Horowitz. It is published by Tetrahedron Publishing Group, Sandpoint, Idaho. And if you want to get a copy of the book or any of the books that we mention here on the air, sometimes books are located locally at Amazon. You can get them online, or you can get them from Barnes & Noble or a used bookstore and so on. But if you run into trouble and you're unable to find a book, because like this book written by Henry Ford called The International Jew, those books are called underground publications. They're not in the ordinary course of commerce here in the United States in any event. So to find a book like The International Jew by Henry Ford, you may have to go to an underground bookstore. And the one that we recommend is BraveNewBookstores.com. BraveNewBookstore.com is located in Austin, Texas. And their phone number is 512-480-2503. And that's 512-480-2503. So if there's any publication that you can't find, you're looking out here and you can't find it, if you'll go to Brave New Bookstore, they'll go find it for you. Now we're trying to use the Kwok Ting test. Remember now, the Supreme Court of the United States back in 1891, I've mentioned this to you more than once, I came up with a test here in order to determine whether a witness is telling the truth. And after all, I wasn't there when this document was written in 1884. So we have to go to some other source of information, some other modality, methodology here for coming to an understanding of what really happened. And so the court says testimony must be complete. And the testimony must contain extemporaneous detail. And the testimony must be supported by witnesses and evidence. All right, so I'm going to give you the witnesses and evidence. My belief is that these protocols were in fact written by Jewish authors. Who these Jewish authors are, I don't know. They don't say. But I don't believe this was written by the Masonic Order or the Jesuits or Catholics or Republicans or Democrats or Communists or anybody else. I think it was written by the people that the protocols claim wrote it. The internal evidence of the document itself, using terms like Gentiles, chosen people, and world victory, show that it's international in its scope. And whoever's got this power has already exercised it in World War I and World War II and probably in our American Civil War and Revolutionary War and so on. Now, let's take a look here at some more extemporaneous evidence. On page 84 here of the book called Who is Esau Edom, the thrust of the book is to identify who the people in the world today who call themselves Jews, such as the Israelis in Palestine. Actually, they're not descended from Judah. They are descended from Esau. Esau was Jacob's brother. Jacob, if you'll remember the story from Sunday school, stole Esau's birthright. That's what has created the conflict between the Western democracies, that is the United States, Great Britain, Ireland, France, the Scandinavian countries. Those are the Israelite countries. Those are the descendants of Jacob. The descendants of Esau have taken up Judaism as their religion. They're not physically Jews. They are Edomites. And the thrust of the book written by Charles Wiseman, Who is Esau Edom, points that out and shows you the scriptural authority for that conclusion. And I would endorse that. I've read his book, and I think he's correct. So I recommend it. Now, if you want a copy of it, I think you can probably get a copy of Who is Esau Edom from BraveNewBookstores.com, but I'll give you his name and address here. It's published by Wiseman Publications, 11751 West River Hills Drive, number 107D, in Burnsville, Minnesota, 55337. I've got a phone number on here, too. It's 1-612-952-0202. Try that number. It's 1-612-952-0202. There's a second number here, 1-612-890-0202. Again, that's 1-612-890-0202. See if you can get it. And let's go through this once more. It's Charles A. Wiseman, second edition, 1992, published by Wiseman Publications. They're located at 11751 West River Hills Drive, number 107D, in Burnsville, Minnesota. Burnsville, Minnesota, and the zip code 55337. All right, so let's take a look at some extemporaneous detail here. Here's a citation. It says, Jewry's political outlook is world rule in the material sense. Jewry is an international nation. It is this and nothing else which gives significance to its financial, educational, propagandist, revolutionary, and immigration programs. And there's a footnote here. Number 26. That's a citation that comes from The International Jew, Dearborn Publishing Company, Volume 3, 1921, on page 178. All right, let's take a look here at another page, on page 79. Page 79, we read, democracy, socialism, and communism are all oppressive to fundamental rights and liberties, hazardous to industry and commerce, and inherently unstable. As evidence that these modes of government are created and promoted by Jews, the following quotations should suffice. The Universal Illustrated Encyclopedia, Banner Press, New York, 1978, on page 259, said, quote, it is also noteworthy that World War I was proclaimed to be fought to make the world safe for democracy, and in this respect, that war was very successful. All right, then there's three footnotes. The Universal Jewish Encyclopedia, Volume 10, 1945, page 526. James Madison, cited from the Federalist Papers, number 10. And Jack J. Zurofsky, the ADL brochure of May, 1991. If you'll remember, our founding fathers never had a good word to say about democracy. But going on, here are the citations. The National Geographic Magazine, Volume 18, published in May of 1907, said, of the Russian Revolution of 1905. Quote, the revolutionary leaders nearly all belong to the Jewish race, and the most effective revolutionary agency is the Jewish Bund, on page 314. The American Hebrew Magazine of September 10, 1920, stated, quote, the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia was the work of Jewish brains, of Jewish dissatisfaction, of Jewish planning, whose goal is to create a new world order, unquote. Martin A. Meyer, in his book, Jew and Non-Jew, published by the Union of American Hebrew Congregations, stated that, quote, socialism was originated by Jews, and today Jews play a leading role in its spread and interpretation, unquote. Number four, in the Jewish Encyclopedia of 1905, volume 11, it states that, quote, Jews have been prominently identified with the modern socialist movement from its very inception. That's on page 418. Five, the Jew, Chaim Weizmann stated, quote, "The Jews stand by Great Britain and will fight on the side of the democracies." Cited from the Universal Jewish Encyclopedia, Volume 2, page 49. 6. The Universal Encyclopedia, Volume 9, 1943, under Soviet Russia states, quote, "The majority of Jewish radicals adhered to democratic socialism," unquote, page 668. Number 7. The Jew, Stuart Cahan, in the book Wolf in the Kremlin, published in 1987, wrote, quote, "After all, wasn't the revolution prepared and fashioned by Jews? Both of Karl Marx's grandfathers were rabbis, and Lenin's grandfather was also Jewish. And wasn't Jacob Schwerloff, the first Chief Justice, a Jew, as was Trotsky himself?" Page 81, unquote. Rabbi Stephen S. Wise is quoted in the American Bulletin of May 15, 1935, as stating, quote, "Some call it Marxism. I call it Judaism," unquote. The Jewish Chronicle of April 4, 1919, printed, quote, "There is much in the fact that so many Jews are Bolsheviks, in the fact that the ideals of Bolshevism are at many points consonant with the finest ideals of Judaism," unquote. George Marlin, in his book, Stalin, Trotsky, or Lenin, published in 1937, stated, quote, "If the tide of history does not turn toward communist internationalism, then the Jewish race is doomed," unquote, page 414. And Harry Watson, in a program for the Jews and an answer to all anti-Semites in 1939, wrote, quote, "It is not an accident that Judaism gave birth to Marxism, and it is not an accident that the Jews readily took up Marxism. All that is in perfect accord with the progress of Judaism and the Jews," unquote, page 148. All right, so then, as we look through the citations, then, quotations of various Jewish writers, rabbis, and historians that go back to such publications as the Encyclopedia, the National Geographic, and various and sundry other publications that come out of Jewish institutions. They all support this one world order, this new world order, these protocols of the learned elders that I cited to you in the first half of today's program. I mean, this is a group of people somewhere. And in the internal evidence, claim that they're Jews, claim that they're out to gain control over the world. And now we're looking at extemporaneous evidence from others. And we're looking at witnesses who can testify, and I've supported my theory with the witnesses, evidence, and testimony, or as we would put it in trial, we would say, we want to see the witnesses with the names, dates, times, places, facts, and witnesses. We want to see the evidence, and that's what I've presented. Now listen to some of these names. Karl Marx, a Jew. Jacob Schiff, a Wall Street banker, a Jew. David Ben-Gurion, the first Prime Minister of Israel, a Jew. Mayor Rothschild of the Rothschild banking dynasty, Jews. Sigmund Freud, Jew. Henry Morgenthau, Secretary of the Treasury in the Roosevelt administration, a Jew. Henry Kissinger, Secretary of State, a Jew. John D. Rockefeller and his children, you know, David, Nelson, Lawrence, and so on, all Jews. Harry Dexter White, Jew. Paul Warburg, the architect of the Federal Reserve, a Jew. Bernard Baruch, counselor to presidents, a Jew. Henry Strauss, a Jew. Judge Cardoza, Judge Brandeis, and Felix Frankfurter were all Jews. And the new nominee for the Supreme Court is also a Jew. Adam Weishaupt, the founder of the Masonic Order, was a Jew. And notice now that we've been going through Leonard Horowitz's secret societies, and you'll notice that one of the least common denominators that they all have is that they are Freemasons. One last piece of evidence from Jack Moore. As from the beginning, the top men in the Soviet secret police are still Jews. The present organ of the Soviet Jewish terror is the Soviet State Security Committee, called the KGB. The following Jews occupy high positions in this terror organization. There are no non-Jews in the top positions of the KGB. The chairman is Andropov. In the KGB directorates, we have General Alexander M. I can't pronounce half these names in here. I'll just kind of guess at them. Sakharovsky, head of the first directorate. This agency employs about 10,000 agents abroad. The second directorate, headed by Lieutenant General Oleg M. Gibanov, deals with internal security and employs about 250,000 secret police agents. This agency works directly with the 7th, commanded by Major General V. L. Aladdin, who has 3,000 agents in Moscow. The 8th directorate is under the command of Major General Serafin M. Lenelin, personnel of the 9th directorate, 100,000 border guards. All of the above are Jews. And can you imagine how many employees of these agencies are Jews? Right? Virtually all high-ranking military ranks, Minister of Defense, Chairman, General Staff, Chairman of the Political Section, the Chief Marshal of the Air Force, Marshals of the Soviet Union, Chief Marshal of Tanks, Admiral of the Soviet Union, top Army generals, and Colonel generals are all Jews, everyone, without exception. This is a report received early in 1983, and it states that the Zionists plan to rule the world from Moscow, Tel Aviv, Washington, and London. They have agreed on certain spheres of influence. The East will be under Andropov, Suslov, Kulikov, the West under the Rothschilds and Rockefellers, and Africa under the Oppenheimers. All of these families are Jews. Here are other Jews in top positions: economic planning, finance minister, the founding fathers of the Red Terror, Lenin, Trotsky, Kirchhoff, Engels, Marx, Shelpin, are all Jews. They've got names of all these people. They've got Russian names like Maria, Sverdlov, Zavorsky, and so on down the line here. This is put out by Brigadier General Jack Moore, of the National Military Director of the CEDS, Jews in positions of power in the USSR. All right, so I think I have met my burden. I said I would show you the evidence, and so that's what we've done. Now, going back here to these protocols, did you notice the buzzwords that are used in here? The buzzwords that I mentioned to you, such as, but not limited to, world victory, Gentiles, the chosen people, and so on. Those are the kind of buzzwords that, you know, people in the Jesuits probably aren't going to use. People in the Republican Party aren't going to use. But it would be natural for Jews to use it. And as I've pointed out here, you know, from the people here, Jesus, Jack Moore, Henry Ford, Harold Rosenthal, Marcus Eli Ravage, Rabbi Reichhorn, and the Talmud all support the authorship of the protocols being Jewish. All right, with that, we are set then for next week. We will take a look at New Age versions of the Bible. Now that we've seen the people that are in the power and the prestige and have the money to do it, now let's take a look at what they have done, past tense. We'll do that next time. You're listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. And The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And with that, our time is up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.